Masechet Baba Mesira Daf Yod. We start on the Mishnah on the previous daf. Hayad ochev al gabe behema v'ra'a et ha-mesi'a. V'amar l'chavero tenali. Netala v'amar ani zachiti ba, zacha ba. Im mi shenitenah lo amar ani zachiti ba, techila, lo amar kilum. Someone is riding on a horse and he sees on the floor an item that he wants for himself. So he tells his friend, who's a pedestrian, he's walking, and he can more easily get it. He tells his friends, can you give that to me, right? Pick up that watch over there and give it to me. So the friend picks it up and then he says, oh, I acquired it for myself. In fact, he acquires it for himself. We're going to see that there's two different explanations of this Mishnah. The simple reading is that the friend, the pedestrian, hadn't seen it before, probably. And now the guy on the horse says, can you give me that? And so when the friend picks it up, he is at first intending to pick it up for the guy, the friend on the horse. However, this Mishnah follows the rule that one cannot pick up, acquire something on behalf of his friend. This is one interpretation that we'll see in the Gemara. And therefore, even if he intends to pick it up for his friend, once he picks it up and he looks and says, oh, this is a nice watch, you know what? It will look good on me. And so he changes his mind and says, you know what? I want to keep it for myself. He acquires it for himself. The other interpretation is that this is only if, before he picks it up, he says, you know what, I'm going to acquire for myself, right? He has to intend to acquire for himself. Otherwise, if he intends to acquire it for the guy on the horse, it will go to the guy on the horse. That'll be another explanation in the Gemara. Now, if he picks it up and then gives it to the guy on the horse, and afterwards he says, claims, oh, I acquired it for myself from the beginning, and actually, right, when I picked it up, it was for myself and not for you, so therefore give it back to me, then he has not said anything at all. In this case, by already giving it to the guy on the horse, so even if he didn't intend to acquire it for himself when he picked it up, or even if he couldn't acquire it for the person on the horse when he picked it up, nevertheless, once he gives it to the guy on the horse, that's it. He gave it over, and now what claim can he have to prove that when what he had in mind beforehand? So therefore, he does not get it back. That is the Mishnah. Tenan hatam. Misha leketa tapea v'amar hare zo lifloni ani. Rabbi Eliezer omer zachalo. V'chamim omerim yitenena le'ani nimsa rishon. We're going to compare the law of our Mishnah regarding a lost item that's hefker and someone finds to a Mishnah in Pe'ah where someone collects some Pe'ah. Pe'ah is a corner of a field left for the poor. But let's say someone else comes and he says, I'm going to take this produce here on behalf of this poor person. I'm not taking it for myself. I want to take it on behalf of that poor person. I know they're home and they're hungry and I'm going to go give it to them. So Rabbi Eliezer says, it works. Yes, you can acquire something on behalf of someone else. Hachamim say, it does not work. You cannot acquire something on behalf of someone else. And therefore, this belongs to the general poor, anyone who takes it. So if this guy is already on his way, he should find the next poor person he confronts and give it to them, because it belongs to all poor people. He does not acquire it for that particular poor person who lives wherever he lives. Amar Ula, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Machloket be'ashir me'ashir le'ani. So Ula says, in the name of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, commenting on this Mishnah, that the Machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and Chachamim is only if the person who comes to collect from that corner, from the Pe'ah, is a rich person. A rich person is not permitted to take the Pe'ah produce for himself, because he's wealthy. It's not intended for him. And therefore, he cannot acquire it for himself. Can he acquire it for the poor person? It's different than if a poor person who can acquire it for himself then takes it for his friend who's poor. So the machloket is only if the person taking it is himself rich. And here's the two sides. So Rabbi Eliezer uses two migo arguments. Since if this rich person wanted, at any moment he could give away, make a hefker, all of his property, and then he will be poor. So a rich person can always at will decide, you know, I'm going to make myself poor. And then if he was poor, then he would be able to take it himself. And second, since he could collect the pa'ah himself, so he can collect it on behalf of his fellow. And we can combine both of those meagre arguments. And even if right now he actually doesn't renounce, nevertheless, since he could, that's sufficient. And since he could acquire for himself, even if he doesn't acquire for himself, he acquires it for his friend, and that works. And so according to Rabbi Eliezer, according to Ola, all the more so if it's an Ani, who he can acquire it on behalf of an Ani. Now Rabbanan sabre, chad migo amrinan, tere migo lo amrinan. They'll be okay with saying one migo, right? If it's a poor person, since he could acquire for himself, he can acquire it for his friend. But you're not going to build a double migo not only that, also even if he's rich, he could renounce all his property and then he'll be poor. No, we're not going to link one migo to another. We can do one, but not two. However, however, everybody would agree that if it's a poor person that's coming to the pe'ah and saying, I'm going to acquire this produce on behalf of my friend, everybody, Eliezer and Chamim, would agree that that's fine, because that's just one migo. Since he could acquire it for himself, he can acquire it for his friend. All right, that is the opinion of Ula. Amar le Rav Nachman, le Ula Rav Nachman challenges Ula. Why don't you say that the machloket in this Mishnah is actually regarding a poor person trying to acquire it? And even there, the machloket exists. Deha mesiyah kol aniyim esla utnan hayarochev al gabe behema v'rata mesiyah v'amar l'chavero tena li netala v'amar ani zachiti ba zachaba. And the proof is from our Mishnah that we just learned, because after all, a lost item is the same is the same as a poor person going to Pe'ah. Just like a poor person at Pe'ah has a right to it, so to a lost item, all people have a right to it. Okay, so now that's a good comparison. So now saying the machloket is regarding aniyim will parallel this case of a mitziah where everybody has a right to it. And what did our Mishnah teach? If somebody's on the horse and he sees this watch on the floor and he says, tells his friends, give it to me. And then the pedestrian picks it up with intention, we're assuming right now, to acquire it for the guy on the horse. But nevertheless, it doesn't work. And that acquisition is not effective for the guy on the horse. And therefore, once as long as he's still holding it, he can look at it and say, you know what? I'm going to acquire it for myself. And he acquires it for himself. So you see here, even though he can acquire it, he does not acquire it for his friend. Now, if you say, like I want to say, Rav Nachman is arguing, that the argument is, in the case of ani la'ani, matnitin mane rabanan hi, then our Mishnah would be the opinion of Rabbanan. Just like Rabbanan say, in the Mishnah in Pe'ah, according to my interpretation, that's actually talking about a poor person. See, Rav Nachman thinks that one person cannot acquire it on behalf of his friend at all. In any case, even if he can acquire it for himself, he still cannot acquire it for his friend. He can acquire it for himself, and then maybe you could say, since he acquires it for himself, he can also acquire for his friend, but he cannot acquire it only for his friend. Rav Nachman said that doesn't work. And that is why Chachamim, in our Mishnah, in Rav Nachman's interpretation, think that an Ani cannot acquire it for another Ani, certainly not an Ashir for an Ani. And then our Mishnah would be the opinion of Rabbanan, and we apply the same thing. Same principle, even though the pedestrian can acquire it for himself, he has no ability to acquire it on behalf of someone else. And therefore, when he picks it up, even if he has intention to pick it up on behalf of the guy on the horse, that's meaningless. He can't do it. And that's why he can keep it for himself. So that would make sense. But Rav Nachman continues to argue, according to you, Ula, that you say that the machloket in the Mishnah and Pe'ah is regarding a rich person that tries to acquire it on behalf of a poor person. That's where they're arguing. But if it's a poor person, then everyone would agree that the acquisition is valid. Then who is the opinion of our Mishnah? Not Rabbanan and not Rabbi Eliezer. Because according to you, Ula, both Rabbanan and Rabbi Eliezer think that a poor person can acquire it for another poor person, and then both of them should agree that the pedestrian can acquire it for the person on the horse, and therefore once he acquires it for the person on the horse, he can no longer keep it. But the Mishnah says that the guy who picked it up can keep it, so you see, my reading is better. Amaleh Matnitin Dama Techila. Ula says, I know the Mishnah too, and I have an answer. The Mishnah is talking about a case where he said, oh, I intended from the outset to acquire it for myself. That's why he keeps it. In other words, according to Ula, if the pedestrian intended to pick it up for the guy on the horse, the guy on the horse sees it, says, give that to me. And he says, okay, I'll give it to you. And he intends for the guy on the horse. Then it would work according to everybody, because a person can, if you couldn't acquire it for yourself, then you can acquire it for someone else. In this Mishnah, where it says he can keep it, it's only because before he picked it up, he said, oh, this looks like a not so nice watch. He sees it already on the floor, and he decides, I'm going to pick it up for myself. Then the guy on the horse cannot force him to give it to him, because he didn't have that in mind. All right, so Ula has a good explanation of the Mishnah, different reading of the Mishnah, but he can explain it as well. And Ula doubles down and says, you know what? And my reading is better, because look at the rest of it. Hachik nami mastabera. Dekatani sefa. Im mishenitena halo amar. Anizi. Look at the continuation that says, if after the pedestrian gave it to the guy on the horse, then he says, I had acquired it from the outset, then we don't believe him. Who says that you did? No, we don't take that into account. The guy on the horse keeps it. Now this word, I acquired it for myself at the outset. Why do I need that? Isn't it obvious, even if he doesn't say at the outset, that that's what he meant? If he meant that, oh, I changed my mind. Now, retroactively, when I acquired it, I'm deciding now, you know what, I wanted it for myself. That would not be anything. Obviously, if he says, I acquired it for myself, he means at the time that I picked it up. At the outset, I decided to keep it for myself. So the word techila here is not necessary. So why is it found in the Sefa? Oh, it must come to teach me that in the Resha is also the same case. It's the same case in the Sefa as in the Resha. And so therefore the Resha is also where he decided from the outset, before he picked it up, that he's going to keep it for himself. That's why he can keep it for himself. But if not, if he intended to acquire it for someone else, then in fact it would work. So according to Ula, one can acquire an item on behalf of someone else. What would Rav Nachman say to that argument about from the Sefa? Ve'idach tena Sefa legaluye resha. Sefa damar techila, resha delo amar techila. He would say the opposite argument. The fact that it says the word techila in the second half of the Mishnah reveals something about the first half, that only in the second half did he say, I meant to pick it up for myself from the beginning. That means in the resha, he did not say and did not intend to acquire it for himself from the outset. That's why in the Resha, because he, in the Resha, it doesn't matter what he had in mind. In the Resha, even if he decided to acquire it for himself, for sure he can keep it. But even if he didn't have in mind to acquire it for himself, he had in mind to acquire it for the guy on the horse. Nevertheless, the pedestrian can keep it because, according to Rav Nachman, one cannot acquire an item on behalf of anybody else. Rav Nachman and Rav Chista damre tarvayhu hamagbia mesia lachavero lo kana chavero. As a follow-up to what we saw Rav Nachman say previously, here Rav Nachman says explicitly, along with Rav Chista, that someone who picks up an item on behalf of his friend, the friend does not acquire it. It doesn't work. You cannot acquire an item on behalf of someone else. My ta'ama, have tofes leba'al cho b'makom shechav la'acherim. But tofes leba'al cho b'makom shechav la'acherim lo kana. Because picking up a lost item that's hefker on behalf of someone else is the same as grabbing assets on behalf of a creditor in a situation where it will be a disadvantage to other people. And anyone who does that is not a valid acquisition. So imagine a case where you have a guy who owes $100 to 10 people. Okay, let's say he owes $100 just to one person. He owes $100 to one person. That person can go and take what belongs to him. That'll be okay. And if the person who is owed money sends his friend and go and take it on my behalf, that would also be okay because he's getting what's rightfully his and no one else is losing out. However, imagine if you have a guy who owes $100 to 10 different people. And now one of those people goes and grabs $100 from the debtor. That would also be fine because he's taking it for himself. And even though now, let's say he only has his $100, now the other 9 people won't be able to go and get their stuff because this guy got it first. Well, he got there first. That would be also okay. What you cannot do is a third party go and grab $100 on behalf of one of those 10 creditors. He cannot do that because even though the creditor himself would be able to grab the $100, here, the third party, by doing it on his behalf, is making a disadvantage for the other 9, because now the other 9 won't have any assets that they can go and seize. That's the halacha regarding debtor and creditor. We're comparing this case to that case. Here we have a lost watch. It's nobody's. There's no identification. Anyone can come and take it. So if I see it, I can go and take it for myself. If you see it first, you can go and take it for yourself. That's fine. However, if I see it and I say, oh, my friend would like it, and I pick it up on behalf of my friend, now I am making a disadvantage to everybody else in the world who will not be able to come take it. So I'm benefiting one person at the expense of others. So just like regarding a loan, one cannot seize assets on behalf of someone in a way that will disadvantage everybody else. So too, a lost item, one cannot seize on behalf of somebody else because it will be at the expense of all the others who could themselves find it. That's Rav Nachman and Rav Chista's position. Itibe Rava Rav Nachman. Mesiat Poel Leasmo. Bamedrim Amorim is Man Shamar Lo Abala Bait Nakesh Imihayom Adorimi Hayom. Avala Marlo Asemi Melachayom Msiato Shel Baal Habayi too. So we have a challenge to Rav Nachman from Rava, from a Braita, that says a day laborer, right? So you hire a day laborer to work for this whole day, for 10 hours, and he finds something while he's working. He finds a coin there on the floor. He can keep it for himself. When is that true that he can keep it for himself? Only if the boss hired him for a specific task, like a weed for me today, till for me today. So since any weeding and tilling he does on that day, well, the benefit of that goes to his boss, but he doesn't own everything else or anything else that he happens to do on that day, and therefore, if he finds a lost item, the laborer can keep it. However, if the boss said, I want you to do work for me today, generic, he didn't specify a specific type of work, he said, anything you do today, any benefit that you create will be mine. Well, in that case, so the labor, everything he does, including picking up a lost item, right? Could imagine he could hire him, says, and tell him, go walk along the boardwalk and find lost coins. And then anything he finds would go to the boss. So since the boss did not specify any specific labor, so anything that the worker does, including finding a lost item, will go to the owner. So what do you see from here? That a laborer can acquire an item on behalf of the boss, on behalf of something else, of someone else. That goes against Rav Nachman's principle. Rav Nachman said, you cannot pick up something on behalf of someone else. It goes at the expense of everybody else in the world. But here, the worker does. He picks it up and it goes to the boss, even though it's at the expense of everybody else in the world. How can you explain that? And Rav Nachman says it's different. A worker is different because his hand is an extension of the hand of the employer. It's like almost like a slave is like the property, like an extension. Even in English, you can say hand to refer to someone's physical hand, or a hand like a handmaid. And so the worker is an extension of his own hand. That's how it's working. It's not one person on behalf of someone else, but rather it's an extension of his own body. That's how he acquires it. So that's a different case. However, Rava quotes Rav saying, wait a second, but a worker can quit any time during the day. Even if he agrees in the beginning of the day, I'll work all day for you, sunrise to sunset, I'm going to work for 12 hours on your behalf. But if he decides in the middle of the day, you know what, I'm tired, I quit, I don't want to, you can't force a person to work. In other words, he's not a slave, and his body is his own. So therefore, it's not true that you would consider his body as an extension of the employer, like a slave. Not true, right? He has his own rights, and he can quit, and therefore, since he has rights, a right to quit, he should have a right to over his own body and not as an extension. And therefore, when he picks up something, even if he has in mind, it should be on behalf of the boss, it shouldn't work, according to Yehuda Nachman. Nachman says, listen, as long as he's working, right now his entire body belongs to the owner, because the owner says, I'm hiring you. Anything you do, any productive work, anything you make, I get. As long as he's working. Now, it's true, he can quit any time, fine. Once he quits, then he's his own person. And the reason why he can quit is because of the pasuk that says, Hashem says, Bnei Israel are my servants, only my servants, and they cannot be forced to be servants of other servants. In other words, a human cannot be forced to be a slave to another human, or a Jew to another Jew. And therefore, yes, you can hire him and get and benefit from all of his labor, and he willingly agrees to that. That's fine. And while he's working, his hand is an extension of the boss's hand. But if he wants to quit, you have to let him quit, and then his hand is no longer an extension of his boss's hand. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamagbia misya lachavero kana chavero, v'im tomar mishnatenu, de'amar tenali, ve'lo amar zecheli. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says in name of Rabbi Yochanan, someone who picks up an item on behalf of his friend, the friend gets it. And if you'll ask, what about our Mishnah, where the pedestrian picks it up, and he doesn't, and it says he can keep it for himself, the guy on the horse doesn't get it, he'll explain that the Mishnah is where the guy on the horse says, give it to me. Give it to me is not the same as acquire it for me. So that's the difference. According to Rabbi Yochanan, one can acquire an item on behalf of someone else, but only if the sender, the guy on the horse, says, acquire it for me. In that case, the second the guy on the floor picks it up, he's acquiring it on behalf as an agent of the guy on the horse. But if he just says, give it to me, then that means pick it up, you know, just some, and then hand it to me only when he hands it over. That's when the acquisition happens. So because he didn't say, acquire it for me in our Mishnah, that's why the guy who picks it up can keep it for himself. Next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of proper ways of acquiring something. Ra'ata misya v'nafal aleha, oba acher v'chezik ba, ze shechezik ba ra'aba. Someone sees an item on the floor, a watch, and he likes it, and he falls on top of it. But then someone else comes and actually seizes it, grabs it, and takes it. The one who grabs it in his hand is the one who actually acquired it, because taking something with your hand is a valid form of acquisition. Flopping on top of it is not a valid form of acquisition. Amar Resh Lakish, Mishum Abba Kohen Bar Dela, Arba Amot Shel Adam Konot Lo Bechol Makom. Resh Lakish says the name of Abba Kohen Bar Dela, that the four amot around a person can acquire something on his behalf. It makes a kind of a temporary courtyard, a personal space, and then anything in that space, that's his. Mai Ta'ama, Takinu Rabbanan Dela Atele Ansuyem. What's the reason? This is not a Deoraita form of acquisition, but rather a takana of the rabbis, so that people shouldn't come to fight. If I come and I see something, I stand right next to it, so then the implication is that I want it. Okay, I don't have to go and grab it and guard it and all that. That's mine. If someone else comes and takes it when it's right next to me, then I'm going to start fighting and say, I was here first, which I was here first. But that person says, well, just standing near something, even though you're near it, doesn't mean that you necessarily wanted it. I did a form of acquisition. Now we're going to start fighting. So you know what? Much easier. If you're near the parking space first, that's the best analogy in our modern times, then you get it, right? And even if that means you're in front and you're backing up, that's it. You were there first. You get it. And no one else can come and swoop in and come and take it from you, right? As long as we all agree to that, then we won't come to fight. אמר אביי, מוטיב רבי חייא בר יוסף פאה. אמר רבא, מוטיב רבי יעקב בר אידי נזיקין. Now we're going to have a couple of challenges to this rule of Resh Lakish. And Abaye said that, reported that, Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef challenged Resh Lakish from a Mishnah in Masechet Pe'ah. And Rava added that Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi challenged this rule from a Mishnah in Nizikin. It's going to be our Mishnah. I think you get a sense here of the types of mnemonics that the rabbis used. You know, there was a question here from that Mishnah in Pe'ah. Which one? This is enough to jog your memory to remember which Mishnah it was, or you could figure it out. Just go through the whole Masechet and you'll find the one Mishnah that is relevant to this, and then you'll figure out what the question is. So, just one word like this is sufficient to reconstruct what they said. Okay, but luckily the Gemara does it for us. Amar Abaye, Motib Rebichia bar Yosef Pe'ah, Natamik Sat Pe'ah Vezarak al Hashe'ar, En lo ba kelum, Nafalo Aleha, Parasta Lito Aleha, Ma'avirin Oto Hemena, Vechen Be'omer Shichecha. So the Mishnah in Pe'ah that says, if you have a poor person, he's in the corner of the field, and he wants to acquire some things. So the way to acquire it is to pick it up in your hand, then it's yours. But let's say he picks up some pe'ah, and now he sees a whole bunch of pe'ah over there near him, and he throws the pe'ah that he does own on top of the other one to claim it. That is not a form of claiming. Throwing produce on top of other produce is not a form of acquisition. So therefore, another poor person can come and just take that with that stuff that's on the floor underneath. And if a poor person, right, sees some produce in the corner and he flops on top, he falls on top of it, covers it with his body. Sorry, that we could just remove him and say, you did nothing, anyone else can come and take it. Or if he takes his garment and he puts his garment on top of this pile of produce here, he does not acquire it thereby. It's very nice of him to protect it from rain or whatever, but it doesn't do anything as an acquisition. And that's true not only of pe'ah, but also of a forgotten sheaf, stalks that are in the field, where also the poor person can get it by picking it up, but not simply by falling on top of it. That's the Mishnah. V'yamat arba'a mot shel adam konoto b'chol makom niknu le'arba'a mot ideh. If you say that four amot of a person can acquire anywhere, that was the exact language of Resh Lakish, then the poor person should acquire that grain just by being near it. Okay, so what? That he didn't pick it up, he fell on top of it. By falling on top of it, he's definitely near it. It's definitely within his four amot, so let him acquire it through that means. Good question. Our answer is because he didn't say, I want to acquire it. So it's not clear what his intention is. Maybe he's covering it because he wants to protect it, or he's lying down, he wants to take a nap. I don't know. So he didn't say, I'm acquiring it. V'itakun Rabbanan, ki lo amar mai haveh. Wait a second, we challenge that. If the rabbis made instituted a law that you acquire it by being near it for amot, then why does he have to say anything? For other forms of acquisition, to pick something up or to pull it, I don't have to say that I'm makneh by doing this. The action speaks for itself. And so too, if it's true that the rabbis made such an ordinance, then it should be his automatically without him having to say it. So we have a new answer. Kevan de nefal, you're right. If the poor person just came and stood next to this pile of produce, by standing there, it would be his. But the fact that he went and fell on top of it, that actually makes it worse, because that shows that he wants to acquire it by falling and not by the rabbinic enactment of through his four cubits that are around him. So he nullified, he gave away his own form of acquisition of four amot, and instead decided, I'm going to acquire it by falling. But falling on top of something is not a form of acquisition, and therefore he doesn't get it at all. That's the explanation. Rapapa Amar, Rapapa gives a different answer. Ki takinu rabbanan ba'amot be'alma, besadet ba'alabayit la takinu le rabbanan. Va'af agav de zakha le rachamana be'gava, ki zakha le rachamana la'luche ba'lunkatu ulenakute pe'al. Meve chasero lo zakha le rachamana. When the rabbis made this ordinance, that your four amot can acquire for you, that's in the public domain. Okay, public domain, you can go and acquire it. It's just out in the out in a field that doesn't belong to anybody. But if it's a field that belongs to a person, the rabbis did not make an ordinance in that situation, which makes sense. Your four amot can be your personal space if you're in a public area, but in a private area, you actually are in the owner's space. It's his. So even though the Torah says that a poor person can come into the owner's field and take the corner, that's the right, and the owner has to allow the poor people in to do that. The Torah, Rachamana, right, the merciful one, only allows the poor person to come in, to walk in, and take the pe'ah. But to make his own temporary chaser with the four amot around him, that the Torah doesn't mean to say that. So therefore, the idea is as follows. The rabbi said, in public areas, that's when people are going to come to fight, and they're going to say, you know, I'm standing next to this item. It's mine because I was standing next to it. Someone else swoops it up, and these guys are going to fight. But in an owner's field is own, is his own. An individual walking in does not make a chatzed. You can't make your own courtyard in someone else's field. Can you walk in and pick up pe'ah and take it? Yes, but that's it. So there's no contradiction. Amar Rava, motiv Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi Nezikin. Now we're going to get to the other challenge from a Mishnah in Nezikin, which is our Mishnah. Ra'ata mesiyav nafalo aleha ba acher v'hechazik ba ze shechazik ba zacha ba. Someone sees a watch on the floor and he flops on top of it. Doesn't do anything. Someone else who comes and grabs it gets it. And now, via mart aba mot shel adam konot lo bechol makom niknu le aba amot ide. Now, if you say that there is such an ordinance that the four amot of a person can acquire it for him anywhere, then the guy who flops on top of it, all right, it's true. This is not a form of acquisition, but it certainly is within his personal space of four amot. So that should acquire it based on that rabbinic ordinance, and therefore the guy who seizes it should not be able to keep it. How can you explain this Mishnah? Hachab ha-maizkinan de lo amad akne. Same answer as before, because the guy that flops on top didn't say, I will acquire it. He has to say so. V'itakon banan ki lo amad mayhavet. But we said, that's not true. So if the rabbi has made an ordinance, then it works automatically. But they didn't say, oh, and you have to say, I acquire it. That's not true of anything else. We saw that. Generally, when the rabbis make a takana, they do it similar to the way Doraita law. Doraita law doesn't say that if you're riding an animal to acquire it, you also have to also say, and I acquire it thereby. It's the action that speaks for itself. Rather, by falling on it, he shows that he wants to acquire it through the method of flopping on top of it. And he doesn't want to. He actually gives up his right to acquire it through four amot. So he gave up the actual right he had to four amot, which the rabbis gave him. And falling on top of something is not a form of acquisition, and that's why he does not acquire it. Another answer, Rav Sheshat Amar, Ki takinu rabbanan besimta, dela dachaki rabim, beshut rabim, dela deka dachaki rabim, la takinu rabbanan. Says, when the rabbis made this takana, that your four amot is your personal space and becomes your courtyard and acquires for you, that's in an alleyway. It's a public area, but it's an alleyway where there's not many people there. So there it makes sense. You know, you're in an alleyway, there's only a few people that walk by, and you're standing right next to an item. Okay, so then that's yours. No one else should take it. However, in a big thoroughfare, a major street, where there's lots of people going back and forth, there the rabbis did not make such an ordinance. Right, it's just because you're standing, there's 12 people standing next to any given spot. There is very crowded. So you can't just say, oh, I'm here, this is my four amot. You're within your four amot, there's also a dozen other people that are sharing that four amot. So they didn't make this takana. And our Mishnah that says the guy fall on top of something is talking about in a public domain. That's why falling doesn't work, arba amot doesn't work, because it's in a public thoroughfare, and the rabbi is only talking about in a small alleyway. Question, v'habechol makom kam. Resh Lakish in his words said that the rabbis instituted that four amot of a person works anywhere. Doesn't anywhere come to include even a public thoroughfare? And the answer is, kol makom da'atu yesideh reshut rabim. The everywhere comes to include the sides of the main street. The sides of the main street, there's not so many people walking there. So there, people would go on the side and they could rest there and do their thing.
you know, to have a conversation, whatever. And so that those, the sides of it are not so busy. So if you are near something on the side, that's the same as an alleyway. That's why it says b'chol makom, to include the side. But the middle of Main Street, where there's lots of people going back and forth, the takana does not apply in that area.
Ve'amar Resh Lakish mishum Abba Kohen Bar Dela. We already saw one halacha by Resh Lakish in the name of Abba Kohen Bar Dela, and here's another. Ketana en la chaser ve'en la arba amot. A minor girl cannot acquire something, particularly her get, through a courtyard or through her four amot. If someone is married to a minor girl and she's competent enough to safeguard her get, she can get divorced herself. Doesn't have to go to her father. She can take it herself, but has to go into her hand. She is not able to use a courtyard in order to acquire it. Again, I'll explain why. Rabbi Yochanan amar mishum Rabbi Anai, amar yesh la chaser veyesh la arba amot. Yochanan says she can acquire her get. We'll see later how it applies to other items that she may want to acquire. And yes, she has the law of a courtyard and arba amot. Arba amot is the rabbinic takana that says the person's personal space is like a courtyard. So they go together. Either both work or do not work according to Resh Lakish, or both do work according to Rabbi Yochanan. B'mai kami palge, what's at the essence of their controversy? Mor sabar hasir mishum yada it rabai ki yechidit la yad, hasir nami it la. Rabbi Yochanan said that a courtyard is like a hand, and therefore, just like she has a hand, so too she has a courtyard. A person's courtyard is an extension of their hand. The point is that they have to acquire something with their body, but their courtyard is also like their body, just like we saw before that a person's worker for that day while they're working, his extension is their hand, and the hand can do lots of things that a messenger cannot do. Like we saw before, a hand can pick up something on behalf of the owner, and that's why a worker can pick up a coin on behalf of his boss, even though a shaliach, according to Rav Nachman, couldn't. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. Umor sabah Resh Lakish thinks, chaser mishum shlichut et rabai v'kihechi d'shlichut letla, chaser nami letla, that a person's courtyard acts as an agent. And just like a minor does not have the mental competence to appoint an agent to do something on her behalf, so too she cannot appoint a courtyard. She cannot use a courtyard to acquire a lost item or to acquire a get. Now we ask, can anyone really say that a courtyard has the same law as a messenger, and so she cannot do it because it's like a messenger? This is a challenge to Resh Lakish, who said that she cannot make a courtyard because she cannot make a messenger. So does anyone really think that it is a messenger? V'atanya b'yado en li ele yado. Gago chasero karpefo minayin tamud lomar himaseh mikol makom. This is regarding the law of a thief. If a lost item, the pasuk says, if a lost item is found in the thief's hand, then he has to pay double. The Midrash Halacha asks, well, that's only if it's actually in his hand. What if we find the stolen item in his on his roof, in his courtyard, or on his porch? What about that? Does he also have to pay double? And the answer is yes, because the pasuk says himaseh timaseh, if it's found in double language, to include all places. So this means no matter where it's found, we say, oh, you're the thief, and therefore he has to pay double. Although the pasuk itself is only talking about where it's found, we're extending it to mean also if you perform an act of thievery through either one's hand or through one's courtyard. For example, if you set up a trap in your courtyard so that when an animal walks in, it gets trapped there, or you close the gate, and so you steal something through your courtyard, that's also considered an act of stealing. What do we see here? We see explicitly that it says that a person's courtyard is an extension of his hand, right? And therefore, it seems that the hand reasoning is correct, and therefore, just like a girl has a hand, she can have a courtyard, and how can you say that it's an agent? ויש אקדתך חסם משום שליחות את רבי, אם כן מסינו שלך לדבר עבירה, וקיים עלן אין שלך לדבר עבירה.
And here, to deepen the question, if you think that a courtyard works as an agent, well then, you'll have an example here of an agent to perform a sin. But we have a general rule that there is no agency for sin. If a sender tells someone, an agent, hey, go and commit murder for me, steal something from me, that's not a valid agency. The agent has to know, this is not allowed, I'm not doing it. And if the agent does it, then the agent is liable and not the sender. And so if that's true, and since that is true, and if a courtyard is the same as an agent, well then, if a thief steals something through his courtyard, then the thief should not be liable because the courtyard, I didn't steal, the courtyard did it, right? En shalich lidvar avera. But we wouldn't say that. The thief, the owner of the courtyard, who used his courtyard to steal something, is liable. So you see that a courtyard must work as a hand and not as an agent. Amaravina, that's the question. Answer. Two answers. We're going to have two answers. Here's the first one. Amaravina, hecha amdinan de'en shalech lidvar avera. Hecha de shalech bar chiyuvahu. Aval bechaser de la bar chiyuvahu. Mechayev sholcho. When do we say there's no agency for sin? That's only if the agent himself has liability for such a transgression. That makes sense. If one human sends another human to go and steal, well, the agent is himself liable for stealing, so that's why the agent is liable and the sender is not. But a being, a person, or a thing that has no liability, like a courtyard, you're not going to hold the courtyard liable, bring the courtyard to court, and say, how could you do that? Since the courtyard is not a person that could be held liable, therefore the sender is liable. So that's the difference. In fact, you could say that a courtyard is a messenger, is a shaliach, and nevertheless, in this case, this is a type of shaliach that can be a shaliach, and the messenger, the sender, is liable because it has no liability itself. Ela me'ata omer le'isha ve'aybes uveginbuli de'la b'nech yubaninu hachinameh de'michayev sholchan. We challenge Ravina's distinction and says, what if a sender asks a woman or a slave to go, a married woman, to go and steal something on my behalf? Would you say that since they are not liable, the idea is that they have no money themselves? A married woman and a slave, they don't have any of their own money because anything they make or they find goes to their husband or to their master. So since they have no payment liability to pay, would you say also that that the sender is liable? If a sender sends a married woman or a slave, would you say that the sender is liable and not the woman and not the slave? That's not true. That's not the halacha. We say we apply en shelech lidvar avera even in these cases, but they're not liable. So according to your rule, Ravina, why would you hold the agent liable and not the messer and not the sender? Amarti shav ebed nech yubanin hu vashta mi halet lelishalomed itnanit gadasha isha nishtachrera ebed chayavim leshalem. No, in fact, a married woman and a slave, they are liable. It's just that right now they don't have the means to pay because they don't have any of their own money. But as the Mishnah teaches in Masechet Abakama, should a woman get divorced, let's say a woman stole because someone asked her to do so. She has no money, she can't pay. But once she gets divorced and now she gets, now she has her own money, then she will have to pay. So it just that she owes the money, she is liable, she just doesn't pay right now. And the same thing, if a sender sends a slave, go and steal something, and now that slave, he is liable to pay. He doesn't have his own money, so he can't pay anything. But as soon as he gets freed, then he'll have his own money, and then he has to pay. So in fact, the law is consistent in those cases. They are, because they have liability, they do have to pay. It's just a practical concern of, do they have money to pay up right now? All right, that's the opinion, that's the answer of Ravina, who says that this baraita is no contradiction to Resh Lakish. In fact, a courtyard is a messenger, as Resh Lakish says, and that's why a minor girl cannot receive her get in a courtyard, because
she cannot make a messenger, and therefore the courtyard won't work. And if you ask about the thief, well, the thief is a different story. The thief is sending his courtyard, is true, and generally, but if it has no liability, and in this case, the agent, the courtyard, has no liability, so the sender is himself liable, and that's why he's liable in that case. Okay, another answer. Rav Sama Amar. Hecha amdinan en shel chidvar abeda hecha di I ba'e avid I ba'e la abid. Abal chaser di ba'al kolche motiv ba michayev sholchom. When do we say that there is no agency for sin? Only if the agent has free will. And he can decide if he wants he can do it and if he wants he doesn't do it. Well then he has free will, so the agent should have known better and not perform the act. If he does do the sin, the agent is responsible and not the sender. However, if it's talking about an object that has no free will, like a courtyard, that is going to catch the animal no matter what. It's the owner that set a trap in his courtyard. The courtyard has no mind to decide to do a sin. And therefore, in that case, the messenger, the sender, is liable. And so, in fact, we can say a courtyard is a messenger. And again, this is no problem for the Resh Lakish. Resh Lakish says it's a messenger. A minor girl cannot make a messenger, and so she cannot receive anything through her courtyard. And in the case of a thief, he is liable because the courtyard has no free will. May Benayhu, what would be a practical case where there would be a different outcome between Ravina's answer and Rav Sama's answer? Ika b'nai kohen damar leli Israel seve kadesh li isha gerusha. Iname ish damar la le isha afki akepi li katan. If a kohen sends an agent to do kiddushin to a woman on his behalf, and that woman is the divorcee, so this is a prohibition for the kohen to marry her. If you do an act of kiddushin, the marriage is valid. It's just a prohibition. So he tells Yisrael to do that. So now what do you want to say? That the agent gets the sin? The problem is the agent is a Yisrael. And Yisrael cannot get a sin for marrying a divorcee, because Yisrael is allowed to marry a divorcee. So here's a case where you have a person who is not liable. So if you follow the opinion of no liability, of that when the agent is not liable, then the sender is liable. So in this case, the sender would be liable. On the other hand, if you follow Rav Sama, that says it depends if it has free will, here the Israel has free will and can decide to do it or not, and therefore the sender, the Kohen, is not liable. That's one. If a man tells a woman, give a haircut to my child for me, and I want you to cut off his pe'ot, do a rounded haircut, which is prohibited for a man, but a woman is permitted to cut her sideburns and get a rounded haircut. So here, if the man asks the woman to do that, if you follow Ravina, then the woman is not liable, because she cannot have a liability. A woman cannot get a sin for cutting off sideburns, because she's allowed to cut off her own sideburns. And therefore, according to Ravina, the man, sender, would be the one that's liable. On the other hand, according to Rav Sama, since a woman has free will and can decide to do it or not, so she's the one that decided, and therefore the man that sent her is not liable for sending the woman to cut off this kid's sideburns. And the Gemara explains this as exactly as we just said. If you follow Rav Sama, that says anytime the agent has free will, the sender is not liable. And here the agents do have free will, and therefore the sender is not liable. Lehach lishana damat kol hechad shaliach la bar chiyuva michayev sholcho hanename kevan de la bnei chiyuvanin hu michayev sholchan. But according to Ravina, who says that anytime a messenger does not have liability, the sender is liable. So in this case, since the messengers are not liable, Yisrael can't be liable to marrying a divorcee, and a woman cannot become liable for cutting off sideburns. So therefore, and according to him, the sender will be liable. And now we're going to ask once again against Resh Lakish, is there anybody who thinks that a chaser is not a yad? That was fine. Rabbi Yochanan said it's a yad. And just like a girl has a yad, so too she can have a courtyard. This is a challenge against Resh Lakish, who says, no, it's not a yad, but rather it's a courtyard. It's a messenger. Courtyard is a messenger. So how can you disagree? This is regarding receiving a get, that a man has to write a get for his wife and give it into her hand. The Midrash says, okay, you can give it into your hand, her hand, but how about, can the husband deliver it into her courtyard or her roof or an enclosure? How about that? Does it work? And the answer is yes, because the pasuk says an extra word, venatan, and as long as he gives it to her, no matter what way he gives it to her. So we see here that this is an extension of hand, because it says it's deriving it from the word hand, and then that means that courtyard also. So this seems to see it may, to argue that Rabbi Yochanan is correct, that a girl should, just like she has a hand, she has a courtyard. How can Resh Lakish explain this? And the answer is, Linyan get kula amala peligi de chaser mishum yadai itrabai, ki peligi linyan mesia. Oh, in fact, we misunderstood the machloket to begin with. When it comes to a get, everybody agrees that a courtyard works as a hand. And therefore, everybody would agree, even Resh Lakish, that a girl can receive a get in that way. The only difference between them is regarding acquiring an item, not a get, right? Just some lost item. I don't know, a lost animal that happens to walk around and it has no owner, hefker. Can she acquire it? Can a minor acquire it through her courtyard? Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Rabbi Anai, says we compare the two, and just like she can acquire a get through a courtyard, so too she can acquire a found item through a courtyard. Whereas Rabbi Resh Lakish, in the name of Abba Kohen Bar Badela, says no, these are distinct categories. A get is a special thing that, yes, we allow her to receive a get, help her out, but for a lost item, no, she cannot receive a lost item in her courtyard. That's one answer. Or maybe, in fact, everybody agrees with Yochanan and Resh Lakish that just like she can receive a get, she also she can receive a lost item, and we learn one from the other. But what's the machloket? If a girl can use a courtyard for anything, in other words, the idea is once she can use a courtyard to acquire a get, so that's it. Her courtyard, she can use a courtyard. So she uses it for everything. The question is, will we extend that also to a minor boy? Rabbi Yonai says that we'll say the same. Just like a minor girl can acquire items with her courtyard, a minor boy also can. Why would you make a distinction? Whereas Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Resh Lakish, in the name of Abba Kohen Bar Dela, says, no, this is a special law for a girl because she needs to acquire her get, so too she can acquire other lost items. But a boy, that does not apply to, and he cannot acquire items with a get. That's the second answer. And the third and last answer, v'ibayet ema, mor amar hada, omor amar hada v'lapidei get. In fact, there's no machloket between these amoraim. They were just each addressing different cases. The Shakish, in the name of Bakohen Bardela, when he said a courtyard doesn't work, he was talking about trying to acquire a lost item, in which case it doesn't work. And Rabbi Yochanan, when he said a courtyard does work for a minor girl, he was talking about to receive a get. And everybody agrees with that. They just happened to be talking about different things, and then they're recorded without that context and put back to back. And it looked like there was an argument. In fact, there was no argument after all. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen ve'amen.